This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. Welcome back to the Relic Radio Show. Thanks for joining me this Tuesday for another hour of radio drama. We begin this week with Box 13 and hear their story from February 13th, 1948, titled The Sad Night. After that, we move to October 30th, 1949, for Rocky Jordan and the DeMarco Affair.
Box 13, with the star of Paramount Pictures, Alan Ladd, as Dan Holliday.
You driveling old idiot, what did you do with it?
I'm not going to tell you.
Carl, be careful.
Shut up, Therese. We've got to find out what he did with that copybook.
What's the matter?
Look, he's dead.
Dead? You killed him.
Don't be stupid. He just died. There's no one can prove anything. Just keep your mouth shut and help me find out what he did with the copybook.
Well. Somebody sends me a copybook through Box 13. Now I wonder why.
And now, back to Box 13 and Dan Holliday's newest adventure, The Sad Night.
It was just a child's copybook. And on the front cover was the name Marina Layton and a date, the year 1930, written in a childish, scrawled handwriting. I riffled through the pages. There was nothing of interest, at least. That's the way it looked then. But Susie thought differently.
Maybe it's some kind of a code, Mr. Holliday. Like one to a buried treasure.
Susie, with your imagination and my typewriter, we could go places.
Well, gee, the Count of Monte Woolley found a buried treasure.
That's Monte Cristo, Susie. Two different people.
Well, they both had beards. Oh, look.
Huh? What's that?
It's a letter to Box 13. Listen. Box 13. A day or so ago, you may have received a child's copybook in the mail. If you did, I should appreciate it if you'd bring it to the address below. Yours truly, Therese Layton.
Let me see that, Susie.
Here.
6821 Lakeshore Boulevard. Swanky neighborhood.
Are you going to take it back, Mr. Holliday?
Oh, yes, Susie. If only to see how the other half lives. So I went to 6821 Lakeshore Boulevard. I tossed the copybook in the back seat of my car and it bounced on the floor. Maybe I was thinking about anything but the book, for when I rang the doorbell of the big house, I suddenly remembered I'd left the book in the car. I just about started back down after it when the door opened.
Yes?
I'm looking for Therese Layton.
I'm Mrs. Layton. And you?
Holliday. Dan Holliday. I'm sorry, Box 13.
Oh, of course. Please come in, Mr. Holliday. In the library, please.
Thank you.
Won't you sit down, Mr. Holliday?
Thanks very much.
It's very kind of you to come all this way to return the book. You see, it belongs to my little girl, and I suppose she sent the book to you in, well, mischievously.
Your little girl?
Yes, Marina. Sometimes I think she's a problem child.
Oh, really? How old is she, Mrs. Layton?
Seven.
Did she tell you she sent the book to Box 13?
Well, no, as a matter of fact, she wouldn't say. Then her father found a newspaper with an advertisement cut from it.
And?
We got hold of a paper with the same date and compared the page.
Nice detective work, Mrs. Layton.
I suppose all this uproar over a child's book seems, well, stupid, doesn't it?
Oh, no, not at all. But there's one question I'd like to ask.
Yes, Mr. Holliday?
You say Marina's 7 years old?
That's right. Why?
There's a date in the book, 1930. It seems to have been written in the same hand as the rest. That date would make her quite a big little girl, wouldn't it?
I She put down that date, I suppose, well, not thinking.
Oh, yes, of course. Where is she now, Mrs. Layton?
She's dead, Mr. Holliday.
Huh?
Mr. Holliday, this is my husband, Carl.
How do you do?
I'm very happy to know you, Mr. Holliday. Do you have the book?
You get right to the point, don't you?
Mr. Holliday, our daughter Marina is dead. We want the book merely for sentimental reasons.
Well, I could understand that if your wife hadn't...
lied to you?
Bluntly, yes.
Therese, dear, will you excuse us?
Yes, yes, sir. I'll be upstairs.
My wife isn't well, Mr. Holliday. It's not an easy thing for me to say, but she imagines our daughter is still alive.
Look, Mr. Layton, if I'd ever written a story with as many holes in it as yours, I'd be laughed out of the writing game.
What do you mean?
Your wife says Marina sent me the book, yet you say Marina's dead. You know, you two should get together.
All right, Mr. Holliday. How much do you want for the book?
Oh, now we're getting someplace. What's it worth to you?
500.
Oh? That's a lot of money for a child's copybook.
You asked how much, and I told you. Now, may I have the book?
I don't think so.
It's worth nothing to you, Mr. Holliday. Believe me, it's worth absolutely nothing to you.
All right, maybe I'm just curious. Tell me why you want the book, and maybe we'll do business.
I can't tell you.
Or you won't tell me. Is that it?
I want that book. Now.
I haven't got it with me.
You're lying.
All right, search me. I haven't got it with me. I forgot it.
You're going to be difficult.
Look, the book was sent to Box 13, obviously not by you, your wife, or your daughter. You found out it was sent when you traced my end, right? All right, that means someone else sent it to me. I'll return the book when I find out who and why.
Mr. Holliday, I'm going to get that book.
All right, all right. We'll play a game. Book, book, book. Who's got the book? Now, goodbye, Mr. Layton.
Goodbye, Mr. Holliday. You can find your way out, I hope.
I think so. Oh, anytime you want to tell me the reason behind all this, we may be able to do business.
I think we'll do business, Mr. Holliday. Later.
I left, and when I got home, I spent the rest of the day and most of the evening trying to figure out why anyone would be so anxious to get hold of the book. It was filled with a kid's scrawling handwriting, sums in addition, problems in subtraction, alphabets. Then I came to one page and stopped. It was filled with strange, weird-looking figures, as a kid would try to draw human beings. But there was something about them that didn't look like a kid's work. They were grotesque, almost fiendish faces and distorted, twisted bodies. And underneath were three words in Spanish, La Noche Triste, the sad night. The words were scrawled too, but somehow they were different from the rest in the book. I kept turning back to that page, wondering, trying to connect something in my mind with those figures in the book. And I must have dozed off because the next thing I knew, it was 3 a.m. Turned off my light, lay back in bed, then I was getting company unexpected. And I wasn't in the mood to entertain. Well, 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 what a wonderful thing a skeleton key is, like the magic words, open sesame. Somebody was looking for something, and it wasn't Easter eggs on the White House lawn. I waited, and then... Looking for something, bud? Whoever it was didn't wait for the floor show. I turned on the light. Yeah. He'd grabbed the book, but he'd left a knife behind. One that I picked up with a handkerchief. If there were fingerprints, he would introduce me to the gent. And Kling could do me that favor.
Got any idea who it was, Holliday?
No, I haven't, Kling. We had our waltz in the dark.
Oh, must have been romantic.
Oh, yes, yes, I was overcome. Look, can you get prints off that knife handle?
Seems to me you could pick an easier way of meeting people.
Oh, I like the hard way. It makes for lasting friendships.
Look, did he try to knife you?
Well, I don't think he was doing KP with it.
Why was he after you?
He wasn't.
Oh, I see. He breaks in at 3 a.m. You surprise him, he pulls a knife on you. But he wasn't after you. It was just a social call, or maybe he was a visiting nurse.
Kling, will you see about those prints?
Yeah. If you'll prefer charges.
Maybe, but more important, he took something I want back.
What?
A child's copybook.
A child... You know, Holiday, the more I see of you and this Box 13 gimmick you run, the more I believe in elves and pixies. Why did you have a child's copybook?
I'm learning to write.
You're going to keep this all to yourself, huh?
Till I find out what it's all about.
Okay. Well, from what you say about the cookie who disturbed your Betty by this morning, he might have a record.
In that case, you can tell me who he is.
You don't want me to pick him up?
No, I'd rather have the pleasure. You see, he hung one on my chin.
He hung one on his... All right. Come back in an hour.
Oh, Mr. Holiday. Gee, I've been trying to get in touch with you all morning.
I was at headquarters, Susie.
Oh, what'd you do?
Oh, no, don't jump to conclusions. Why were you trying to get in touch?
Look.
Huh? When did this come?
This morning. I picked up Box 13 mail at the Star Times, and that note was in it.
Mm-hmm. Well, as they say in the books, Susie, the plot thickens. In fact, it's so thick now, I can't see a thing.
How'd you get that bruise on your chin?
I shaved with a baseball bat this morning.
Oh. Well, are you going to meet Marina Layton?
Yeah, that's what she asked me to do in her letter. So if you want me, I'll be at...
At where she says, the lobby of the Camden Hotel.
So I got to the lobby of the Camden Hotel. It wasn't hard to find Marina Layton. She was dressed as she said she'd be. I took a good look before walking over to her. She was about 24, not pretty, but one of those faces that always says, wonderful day, isn't it? Okay, so maybe now I'd find out what all the excitement was about. I walked over. Oh, pardon me. Are you Marina Layton?
Yes. And you're...
That's it. Box 13.
You know, I didn't think there was such a thing. I thought this would all turn out to be some sort of a joke.
Oh? Well, do we sit here?
If you like. Well, may I have it, Mr...
Holiday. First name's Dan.
All right. May I have the book, Dan?
I haven't got it, Marina.
But you must have it. Mark said he sent it to you.
Oh, no. Another character in the show. And who's Mark?
He was my father's dearest friend. But surely you ought to know that.
Look, Marina, I don't know a thing.
Wait a moment. Here's his letter to me.
You want me to read it?
Yes.
Dear Marina, the years I've kept something from you that your father wanted you to have. Now I know someone else wants it. But you can have it by writing to Box 13, care of the Star Times. I want to write more, but I don't dare. Just remember, your own name is a clue. Love, Mark.
Well?
Well, what? If your father wanted you to have what he gave to this Mark, why didn't he try to get it from me?
Who? Who tried to get what from you?
Your father and mother, they...
That's crazy. My mother died when I was born, and my father disappeared almost 5 years ago.
Oh, now it begins to make some sense. Not much, but a little.
What are you talking about?
The character who said he was your father, he wanted that copybook of yours. He must have found out in some way that Mark had it.
But who was the man?
I don't know. He said he was your father.
I don't understand all this.
It makes two of us. But listen, I...
What's the matter?
How do I know you're Marina Layton?
But I am.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess you are. Because since someone already took the copybook from me early this morning, it'd be a little senseless to try to get it this way. All right, Marina, what do you know about a copybook? Yours, with the date 1930 written in it.
Copybook? Mine? But nothing at all.
Huh? Oh, now, wait a minute. All this business has to mean something. Don't you even remember a copybook?
I suppose I must have had one. Wait, of course. Black, ragged-looking. Alphabets in it.
That's it. Now, what about it?
Oh, nothing. It was just an ordinary book. I scribbled in it and... Did you say 1930?
Well, yes, why?
Because in 1930, I was with my father in Mexico. I had the book then because I was being tutored by Mark, and I used it for my lessons.
Did you write anything in it that might, be important?
No, not a thing.
Well, you must have.
I didn't.
Did you write the Spanish words, La Noche Triste?
Why, that means the sad night.
Yes, I know. Did you write them?
No, I don't think so.
than your father must have. But why?
Are you sure those words were in the book?
Well, of course I am. Would Mark know?
Mark? Why, Mark's dead.
And now back to The Sad Night, another Box 13 adventure with Alan Land as Dan Holliday.
We went to the place where Mark had lived. Yes, he was dead. Heart failure, the doctor said. But we learned something else. That he had had visitors the night he had died. And from the description of them, they could have only been the man and woman who posed as Marina's parents. And I learned a few things more from Marina. That her father was an archaeologist, and in 1930 he was excavating Aztec ruins outside Mexico City. It was on the way back to Kling's office in my car that she told me some more.
Father disappeared in Brazil almost 5 years ago. Then the remains of his expedition were found.
And your father?
He died. But he left records, letters for the museum.
And anything for you?
No, nothing.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Wrote letters to the museum, yet nothing for his daughter.
Why do you say it like that?
Doesn't it seem odd that he should leave letters and records for everyone but you?
Yes, it does.
There are a lot of things that seem odd. You wait here, Marina. I'll be right out.
Well, Holliday, I'm just about to leave your office.
Oh, what did you find out?
You were at distinguished company this morning. Little Georgie Garson, strong man, general hoodlum.
Well, I didn't think it was little either.
Want me to pick him up?
Yeah, I'd love your company. Okay, Kling, let's go. I want to ask Georgie a few questions. It took Kling about 5 minutes to get Georgie to talk. He told us he'd been hired to get that book and from his description of the guy who hired him. Well, it couldn't have been anyone else but the man who poses late the day before. Then a quick trip to the house on Lakeshore Boulevard. We might as well have stood in bed. The fake Mr. and Mrs. Layton were gone, and with them, the copybook. And that left us at a dead end. But dead. But at the morgue of the Star Times, Marina and I learned something else.
Uh-huh. I think we got lots of stuff on Albert Layton.
Well, trot it out, Josie.
Yeah. He's the one who got himself lost in Brazil about 5 years ago, isn't he?
Yeah, that's right.
Here's a folder on him. News clips, photos.
That's Dad.
Look. Look, who is this, Jonesy?
Well, let me see. Oh, that's the guy who found Layton, or what was left of the expedition. Name of Carl Bremer.
Oh, Mr. Bremer and the gent who wanted that book are one and the same. Did you ever see Marina?
Not that I remember.
Where were you when your father went to Brazil?
In school.
And you didn't see him again after he left for Brazil?
No.
Jonesy.
Uh-huh.
You know a lot of things. What are the Spanish words, la noche triste mean to you?
Nothing, except they mean the sad night.
Is that all?
Yeah, why?
Because they mean more than that. Marina, can you get a sample of your father's handwriting?
Oh, yes, of course.
And I've got a hunch that Bremer and his wife are leaving for Mexico.
Hey, Dan.
Yeah?
Look, this Layton was an archaeologist. Why don't you go to the museum to find out about him?
Good idea, Jonesy, thanks. But I've got a phone call to make first. If my hunch is correct, we've got to stop Bremer from getting to Mexico.
Straight, Dan. You want this Bremer and his wife picked up, huh?
Yeah, that's it.
What's the charge?
You pick them up. I'll prefer charges. And maybe one of them will be murder.
What?
Will you do it?
Well, what if they're out of the country by now?
Extradite them.
You've got to have a strong charge to do that.
I have. One, causing the death of an old man by trying to force something out of him. Two, hiring Georgie Garson to break into my apartment. And three, attempting to defraud. Is that enough?
Yeah. If you can make those charges stick...
You get them, and I'll make them stick. Marina got a sample of her father's handwriting.
Is this what you wanted?
You sure this is your father's handwriting?
Of course. That's a letter from him, just before he left for the interior of Brazil.
But the writing in the book, it was nothing like this.
Well, maybe he didn't write it.
He must have. Wait a minute. Mind if I write on the other side of this paper?
No.
Okay. Now watch. I'm right-handed. But suppose I write like this with my left hand. What's it look like?
Just a scrawl.
Sure, as a kid would write. As you would have written in 1930.
But why would he have done that?
To make it look as though you'd written it.
Well, that doesn't make sense.
It does make sense if you realize that your father had learned something. Something that was big enough to make him want to hide it. And where would he hide it? In a place no one would ever think of looking for it. A kid's copybook.
No. No, he kept his notebooks. Everything he did was in his own notes.
But not this. You were with him in 1930. What was he doing?
Oh, I told you, working on the Aztec ruins outside of Mexico City.
And what did he find?
His findings were published. The museum has
the museum. What's the matter with me? Come on, Marina. Maybe we're getting someplace.
Yes, of course I know Albert Layton's work. He was a great man. World has lost a genius, Miss Layton. Too bad.
Look, Mr. Dougal, we want you to help us.
I'll do my best. You said over the phone that it was important. It had something to do with our Mexican antiquities here at the museum.
Yes, that's right. What did Professor Layton send here?
Well, come in here, into the Aztec room.
I remember all these things.
Of course, everything isn't here. The Mexican museums were given their share and...
Oh, pardon me.
Yeah?
Look.
What's the matter?
Look, on that far wall, those figures.
Oh, yes. Well, they're only copies. Quite well done, of course. The original paintings were lost when the Spaniards destroyed the temples. The Aztecs were jealous and warlike people.
Because on the far wall were the same figures I'd seen in that copybook. The same grotesque, weird figures with their twisted bodies and savage faces. There were three of them. Their painted eyes looked out at us, seemed to accuse us. I turned to the curator. Mr. Dougal?
Yes, Mr. Holliday.
What are those figures?
Well, they're Aztec gods. The one over here in the upper left is Quetzalcoatl, supreme god of the Aztecs. The one in the upper right is Huitzilopochtli. He's one of my favorites, a god of war. The one at the base of the triangle is Tlaloc, god of rain.
Marina, those were the figures in your copybook, and they were above the words La Noche Triste.
But why? Why should Dad have done that?
Mr. Dougal, what is that triangle?
Well, where each of those figures is painted was a temple long ago destroyed by the Spaniards under Cortez. In the center was one of the causeways that led to Tenochtitlan. That's today's Mexico City. It was over that causeway that the Spaniards made their escape on La Noche Triste.
La Noche Triste. Look, sit down, Mr. Dougal. I want you to tell me a lot more. The curator talked for an hour. And what he told Marina and me all added up. The copybook, the figures of those old Aztec gods. Oh, Marina's father had something, all right. And he hid it in that copybook. No wonder Bremer wanted it. No wonder old Mark had kept it, and the whole thing made a story that went back over 400 years. A story of greed and bloodshed. One that reached out to touch me, Marina, old Mark, Bremer, all of us. Later in Kling's office, facing the Bremers, with Marina sitting there, too.
All right, Holliday, let's have it.
First, I'll take that copybook, Bremer.
All right. What good will it do you?
None. And it wouldn't have done you any good either.
What do you mean?
You caused the death of one man to get this. Another man, famous, respected, lost his head and tried to keep what he had found. But it wouldn't have done your father any good either, Marina.
No, I know.
What's the story, Dan?
Well, it really begins, Kling, when Bremer found the remains of the Layton expedition in Brazil. He found letters, records. He brought some of them back with him, but some he didn't. That right, Bremer?
You know everything. You tell it.
Thank you, I will. One of the letters was to Marina. Marina, whose name is the same as the Indian girl who was Cortez's consort. That was the one you kept, Bremer. A letter telling Marina about the copybook and what it contained.
All right. What is it, Holliday?
Let's go back to July 1st, 1520, to Hernan Cortez and his army. The army that marched through Mexico and destroyed the Aztec Empire.
That's got something to do with all this?
Everything. On that night, the Aztecs rose up in fury against the Spaniards. They had thought Cortez and his men were gods, but they'd found out differently. They determined to drive the Spaniards out forever. The Spaniards took all the gold they could carry. The Aztecs went after them. They trapped Cortez and his army on one of the causeways that led to the city. The causeways were narrow. There were thousands of Indians in canoes. All night long, the battle went on until in the morning, 450 of the Spaniards were dead and thousands of Aztecs. But Cortez and the remnant of his army escaped, got to the mainland.
And the copybook?
Those three words, La Noche Triste, the sad night, are written into Mexican history as the night Cortez and his army and the Aztecs fought and killed each other until the canals were choked with them. The gold the Spaniards took with them did them no good. They couldn't fight with it or eat it. So sobbing and screaming, they dumped the treasure into the waters of the canal, and it sank into the mud at the bottom. It's never been found. Marina's father thought he had located it. But look. Here's a map of modern Mexico City, where the causeways once ran. There are streets and houses. So you see, no one will ever find that gold. And maybe it's just as well. It's too red with blood to be of any use to anyone.
But gee, Mr. Holliday, if all that gold's there, why doesn't somebody go after it?
Oh, you too, Susie.
No, I guess not. But, oh, tell me something, Mr. Holliday. What were the names of those Aztec gods?
Winkin', Blinkin', and Nod. Good night, Susie.
Next week, same time, through the courtesy of Paramount Pictures, Alan Ladd stars as Dan Holliday in Box 13. Box 13 is directed by Richard Sandville with an original story by Russell Hughes. Original music is composed and conducted by Rudy Schrager. Part of Susie is played by Sylvia Picker, and that of Lieutenant Kling by Edmund MacDonald. Production is supervised by Vern Karstensen. This is a Mayfair production from Hollywood. Watch for Alan Ladd in his latest Paramount picture.
Buy wisely. Buy for flavor. Buy Del Monte. Del Monte, the brand you trust for flavor in so many good foods. Time now for Rocky Jordan, brought to you by Del Monte Foods, the brand preferred by more women than any other line of canned fruits and vegetables in the world. Not far from the Mosque Sultan Hassan in Cairo stands the Café Tambourine, run by Rocky Jordan. The Café Tambourine, crowded with forgotten men, alive with the babble of many languages. For this is Cairo, where modern adventure and intrigue unfold against the backdrop of antiquity. Del Monte presents Rocky Jordan and this week's story, The DeMarco Affair.
It was well after the dinner hour at the Tambourine. A couple of dock workers lingered at the bar, sipping arak. I was at a side table with the evening paper when the phone opened up in my office. As I went back, I made a note to close up early if business didn't pick up. It was a good night for some rest. Anyhow, that's what I thought. Hello, Tambourine.
Monsieur Jordan. Monsieur Jordan?
Yeah, speaking.
This is Henri DeMarco.
Oh, what can I do for you, Mr. DeMarco?
It is about the photographic postcards of the Tambourine which you ordered for me. They are now ready.
Oh, well, thanks for calling.
You will come and get them now?
Oh, no special rush, Mr. DeMarco. I've still got a few on hand.
Monsieur Jordan?
Yeah?
Could you possibly come to my shop and pick them up right away?
You mean tonight?
Yes, tonight.
Well, I suppose I could if it's necessary.
Then I will expect you, Monsieur Jordan. I will expect you very shortly.
The click on the line told me he'd suddenly hung up. Well, maybe he just needed the money real quick, something like that. DeMarco had done my work for the past couple of years. Mail home picture postcards of the Tambourine that I kept up front for the tourists. And we'd come to know each other pretty well. So I decided I'd better drive over and see him. It took me into one of the sections of Cairo where the poorer Europeans live. I parked under a dim street lamp and walked down a dark passageway to his little photographic shop where I got my first surprise. The lights were out and the front door was locked. So I moved around, tried the back door. It was locked, too. And that's when I heard a sharp chopping sound from inside. Getting to a low window, I peered in and made out the shadow of a man swinging away with an axe, hacking DeMarco's shop to pieces. I gave the window a couple of shoves. It slid up, and I went in to see what I could do about it. He whirled as he saw me, lunged and swung down with a hatchet. I ducked and then piled in, grabbing for his arms. He twisted half around. I hung on, staying in close. He tried again. I half-blocked his swing, but it landed flat behind my left ear, and I went down. Through the haze that followed, I heard him scramble out the window, and by the time I could pull myself to my feet, he was gone. I lost no time cutting on a light and getting to the phone at the front of the shop and calling Captain Sam Sabaya, Cairo Police. In another 15 minutes, he was there, and I was briefing him on all that had happened.
In other words, Jordan, it is the usual story.
Well, that's the way it happens, Sam.
You receive a phone call, you come, and as always, you are in the center of a violent brawl about which you can explain nothing. Always it is the same.
All right, then maybe you can explain where DeMarco is right now. You're supposed to wait for me here.
Yes, you have told me. Now, the man whom you encountered here, please describe him.
I can't. It was pitch dark.
Oh, yes, of course,
Look,
course.
Do you want me to report these things or not?
Jordan, Jordan, let us have no more of this. I regret my show of impatience. It is only that I have had other matters on my mind.
Don't blame me for that.
Indeed, I do not. I will explain only that a recent and important duty has been to watch certain members of a criminal ring here in Cairo. Now, in spite of all my efforts, they have disappeared one by one. Perhaps even from Egypt.
Your superiors aren't going to like that, huh?
As you say, I have been under extreme pressure. But let us get on with this.
That guy didn't miss much.
As you say, a most thorough job. Cameras, lighting equipment, projectors, all destroyed. Strange indeed.
What's in there, sir?
It is a photographic darkroom. The intruder did not touch it.
Maybe he just never got around to it.
Perhaps. It will be necessary now to examine the shop thoroughly.
What about DeMarco?
After phoning his home, I will put out a call for him through missing persons.
Yeah. You are through with me?
If you like. Would you like a guard to protect you back to your tambourine?
No, thanks, Sam.
That is where you are going, is it not?
You never know, Sam. You never know. I figured Sam knew where I was going, but he nodded a dismissal. I went back up the dark passageway and along the street to where my car was parked. A figure was standing on the street side of the car, and at first I didn't see him. When I went around to get in, he shoved his heavy frame between me and the door. He had a full, crooked mustache, and he needed a shave.
Yassalam alaikum, Jordan. Or is that not the way a greeting is given in Arabic?
Yeah, between friends.
Then we are friends, Jordan.
Step aside. You're blocking my way.
How is that a way to talk to a
aside,
friend?
Aside, I said.
You are too hasty, Jordan.
Figured there'd be a gun. Goes with your face.
Oh, a face you recognize?
Sure. You go crass. Cairo bum. Crumbs like you have a way of sticking in memory. All right, what do you want?
A chance to be of service to you. I am concerned with your safety.
Well, if you're losing any sleep over it, try a pill.
Your actions these past few hours cause me grief, Jordan. You were in the shop of Andre DeMarco. It is not safe at this hour.
Oh, are you that hatchet man?
Jordan, you called the police to the shop of Andre DeMarco. That perhaps was your duty as a citizen. But to persist in showing interest in DeMarco is not your duty. Nor is it wise for your safety.
I suppose you can explain that.
What I say is quite clear. Andre DeMarco is not your concern. Andre DeMarco's affairs are not your concern.
What if I want to make him my concern?
The gun barrel presses your stomach. A trigger may easily be squeezed.
You ever tried since then?
Jordan, I am not talking to hear myself speak. I'm a patient man, but be certain you do not try my patience. Go back to your bed and forget the happenings of this evening. Keep out of the DeMarco affair. You may live to wish that you had. Assalamu alaikum, friend.
Hugo Crass backed away, keeping the gun level, and dropped quietly into the shadows. I got in the car and drove away fast. Crass's advice was all I needed, only I didn't take it. I soon found DeMarco's home, a modest, flat-roofed sandstone house on the Sharia Ramad. At my knock, the door opened a little, and the pretty face of an Egyptian woman peered anxiously out.
Who is it, please?
The name is Jordan.
Oh?
It's about Mr. DeMarco.
You are the Mr. Jordan who runs the cafe?
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, please, enter the house.
Oh, thank you.
I am the wife of Mr. DeMarco. Can you tell me where he is, Mr. Jordan?
I was hoping you could tell me. You see,
Oh, Mr. Jordan, permit me to introduce Roberto Aleman. He is the Andorian consul.
A pleasure, Senor Jordan.
Andorian consul, Mr. Aleman?
Yes, so few people know of my country. It is the small country between France and Spain. You may find it on any map of Europe.
Yes, of course.
Senor Jordan, did you not know that DeMarco is Andorian? French extraction, but nevertheless, Andorian.
No, I didn't know.
Please, feel free to speak before Mr. Aleman. He and my husband are close friends.
Friends? As are all Andorians in Cairo. You see, there are so few of us. That is why we have become closely knit.
Mr. Aleman came tonight in answer to my call. I have been so worried about my husband. And when the captain of the police called a moment ago...
Well, then you know what happened at your husband's shop.
Only that it was smashed. And now my husband is not to be found.
You say you were at the shop, senor?
Yeah, that's right. He called me about an hour ago, asking me to come over and pick up some photographic work he'd done for me.
At such a late hour?
Yeah, I wondered about that, too. But he seemed urgent.
But you have not seen him?
No, he was gone. Any idea what it's all about, Mrs. DeMarco?
There is so much that I do not understand. For many days, my husband has lived under a great strain, about which he would tell me nothing.
Would he have any enemies?
Oh, Mr. Jordan, my husband is a kind man, devoted only to me, his wife, and to his humble business. But enemies? No.
Well, we've got to find him, Mrs. DeMarco. I'll do what I can.
I am most grateful.
I turned to go, but before I reached the door, the loud screech of tires on the street sent us racing to the window. Just in time to see a black sedan pull quickly to the curb, a back door fly open, and a figure sprawl out on the sidewalk. In another second, the car was gone. And even from where we stood, we could see what it had left behind. It was the missing photographer, Henri DeMarco.
Del Monte Foods is presenting tonight's adventure with Rocky Jordan. First thing in the morning, any time during the day, as a mealtime appetizer.
It's Del Monte tomato juice for real satisfaction.
Yes, first thing in the morning, any time during the day, or as a mealtime appetizer, a chilled glass of Del Monte tomato juice really hits the spot. It has just the right tang. All the freshness and sunny flavor you'd expect from Del Monte.
Del Monte tomato juice is fresh tasting.
Yes, indeed. All the rich flavor of fully ripened tomatoes.
Del Monte tomato juice is natural tasting.
Close quality control by Del Monte assures you of true, natural flavor.
Del Monte tomato juice is refreshing.
That's right. Real tomato flavor that makes you ask for more.
Fresh tasting, natural tasting, and refreshing.
That's Del Monte tomato juice. Look for the green can with the familiar Del Monte red shield. Keep several cans in the refrigerator. You'll find they come in mighty handy. And now we take you back to Cairo and tonight's Rocky Jordan story, The DeMarco Affair.
Well, one look at Henri DeMarco told us he'd taken a beating he'd long remembered. Between the three of us, we got him into the house. There, we found that, aside from plenty of bumps and bruises, he wasn't in too bad a shape. Some cold water and plenty of smelling salts finally brought him around. Then we waited for his story, but it never came. To every question, he only shook his head, telling us to forget it. Aleman and I finally gave it up and left. I was still trying to figure it out the next morning when Sam joined me for coffee.
Jordan, I am convinced that what we learn of this affair will not come from DeMarco.
Oh, you saw him already this morning, Sam?
For quite some time.
Get up early.
There is a saying of my people, Jordan. It is dangerous to health for the sun to rise above a sleeping head.
Who knows what's dangerous? Maybe DeMarco thinks it's dangerous to talk.
But he says not even that. He refuses to press charges. He will not say who was involved. He says only that it is a closed affair.
Did you find anything in his shop after I left last night?
Nothing that leads us anywhere. The destruction of his photographic equipment is puzzling. but not so much as his silence. Yeah. Jordan, you still say that DeMarco told you nothing on the phone last night to indicate that he was in danger?
Didn't have to, Sam. It was in his voice.
Mm. Then obviously what transpired from that time until he was thrown from the car at his house was enough to seal his lips.
Mm. Wonder if he thinks we'll give it up this easy.
Well, there is little we can do until DeMarco sees fit to cooperate.
Well, there's still Hugo Crass.
Yes, I shall not forget this man who threatened you, Jordan, this Hugo Crass. I will have my men apprehend him as soon as possible. Perhaps he can shed some light on this affair.
Sam thanked me for the coffee and went out. Just as his limousine pulled away, the tambourine phone started ringing. I took the call. Hello, tambourine.
Ya salam alaikum, Jordan.
Oh, not again.
Seem pleased to speak to a friend.
You better crawl back into your hole, Crass. Police will be looking for you soon.
Oh, pity, Jordan, that you have told them about me.
Yeah, well, I'm bad on keeping secrets.
Then it is apparent, Mr. Jordan, that I must find a way to keep secrets.
You got a plan?
Oh, of course I have, Jordan. And you will not like it.
That was all it took to send me right across town to DeMarco's shop to start digging for answers. It was open this time, and DeMarco was there, puttering around in back. He'd cleared away most of the wreckage. I saw a lot of brand new stuff out of boxes from the Cairo Photo Supply Company. Cameras, lights, and everything. DeMarco came hurrying up.
Ah, Monsieur Jordan, it is good to see you again.
Well, are you feeling by now, Mr. DeMarco?
As well as can be expected, thank you. You have come, of course, for your tambourine postcards. I will get there.
There's no hurry about that.
It will take but a moment. I must apologize for the inconvenience I caused you last night.
Oh, think nothing of it. I see you got some new equipment.
A few items, the tools of my trade, Monsieur Jordan. Without them, I could not be in business.
Oh, naturally. Those cameras must be pretty expensive.
A bit costly. Here you are, Monsieur Jordan.
Oh, thanks. I didn't know you were that well fixed.
I beg pardon?
Having to buy all that stuff at once, it'd be rough on anybody's pocketbook.
Oh, that. Well, there is the installment plan.
Oh, sure, yeah. Installment's good.
The cards, Monsieur Jordan, I made them up just as they were the last time. I trust they are satisfactory.
Oh, I'm sure they are. And here's a check to cover the job.
So kind of you. But I would have sent a bill.
Mr. DeMarco, you called last night. I got a hunch you needed help.
I again must apologize.
I came hoping I could give it. I still think I was right. Now, look, when guys start smashing things, roughing people up...
Monsieur Jordan?
Yeah?
Is there anything else I can get for you now?
No, thanks. I'll be going. I opened the door and looked back, but DeMarco had already turned to his work. So I decided to talk to DeMarco's friend, Roberto Alleman. I found a phone book, got the address, went to a modern office building near Solomon Pasha Square, up to the fifth floor, and in a door labeled Andorian Consulate. When Alleman saw who it was, he pushed aside some passports and a visa stamp, the usual stuff on a consul's desk, and stood up to greet me.
Señor Jordan, I rather expected you. Please sit down.
Oh, thanks, Mr. Alleman.
I presume you have come to me regarding our mutual friend.
Yeah, that's right. I just saw him in his shop.
Oh. So he's already back at work. Well, perhaps it is best. Were you able to learn anything from him?
No, not a thing.
Distressing. His silence is bewildering to all of us. I feel especially sorry for his devoted wife.
DeMarco's scared, Mr. Alleman. Something's hanging over him. Somehow we've got to find out what it is.
I agree. Have you anything to suggest, Senor?
It might not mean much, but we could try something.
Yes?
DeMarco has a complete layout of brand new photo equipment in his shop. It was delivered today.
So soon, Senor Jordan?
That surprised me, too. Now, look, as his consul, maybe you could check something. DeMarco told me he bought the equipment on the installment plan.
Why, that is possible. He's a man of small means.
Well, supposing you call the place where he bought the equipment, just to make sure.
A very wise move, Senor. We must explore every possibility.
Yeah, it's the... Cairo Photo Supplies. I wrote the number down here.
Good. One moment, please. Hello? Roberto Alleman of the Andorian Consulate speaking. I would like some information regarding a recent purchase by an Andorian national at your establishment. Confidential, please. His name is Henri de Marco. Would you tell me on what terms? I see. No. That is all. Thank you very much. Well, Senor Jordan, I fear that we have caught our good friend in a bit of a falsehood.
Yeah?
DeMarco did buy the equipment, but not on the installment plan. He paid straight cash.
I thanked Alamon and left. Well, I knew going to DeMarco again wouldn't help. Anyhow, the dinner hour was coming up, so I went back to the tambourine. I was still mulling it over that night after the help had knocked off, and I was alone. Before locking up, I was behind the bar cleaning out the cash register, facing the back mirror. That's when I saw the front door slowly open. In stepped a man with a crooked mustache. It was Hugo Crass, and he still held a gun.
You are a poor one for taking advice, Jordan. You are a poor one for minding your own business.
I had dived behind the counter, and the bullets plowed into some of my best whiskey and shattered my mirror. But I had other things to think about. I grabbed my gun from under the counter and came up firing. My shots were wild, but they sent Crass scrambling to the door. I fired again. Crass half spun around, but kept moving. I got around from behind the bar, made it to the door, and out of the street, just in time to see a car race off and disappear into the night.
Police headquarters, Sabaya speaking.
Sam, thought you said you were going to pick up Hugo Crass.
Calm yourself, Jordan. He will be found.
And what happens in the meantime? I'm a sitting duck.
Please explain what you are talking about.
I'll tell you what I'm talking about. He's been throwing shots around my tambourine.
Indeed, Jordan.
Are you going to hunt him up now, or aren't you?
Jordan, I will now ask you something. Why did you not tell me everything about this man, Henri DeMarco? Do you not think that I can learn things for myself?
What are you talking about? I haven't held anything back from you.
So, then did you tell me that DeMarco has been living in Egypt illegally for the past 5 years without credentials or passports?
Well,
did you tell me that he is still wanted by the Andorian authorities for tax evasion in his own country and that his name is not really DeMarco at all? Well, Jordan?
I didn't know, Sam.
I am sure that you did not. Now, before you again make demands of the police, remember that you, too, have a responsibility to us.
Yeah, sure, I'll remember.
Is that quite everything now, Jordan?
Yes, Sam. Everything. And I meant just that. All I had to do now was make sure. I pocketed a bunch of keys and a flashlight. Then I stepped on the gas across the Cairo night to the office building off Solomon Pasha Square. The elevator had stopped running, so I took the stairs to the fifth floor. I paused on the last step. The dimly lit hall was deserted, and I got to the door that said Andorian Consulate and began with the keys. Trying them one by one. Sure, it had to be the last one on the ring, but it did the trick, and I was inside the dark office. I had even better luck with the file drawer. It gave me part of what I wanted. Passports, a visa stamp, a lot of regulation-sized photos. Some attached to the passports, some not. I closed it and moved to the desk. That's when I heard the key in the door. I cut the flashlight, but there was no place to go, so I stood there as the door opened and he found the switch. His hand was in his right coat pocket and he left it there, not moving.
Senor Jordan.
Hello, Alaman.
I ask you the meaning of this.
Sure you do. You really want me to tell you?
Do you quite realize the penalty for breaking into the office of a foreign government? Do you realize, Senor...
Cut out the act, Alaman. He's finished his last week's racing sheet.
Have you quite lost your mind?
No, not anymore. You're no consul at all, are you?
How dare you, Senor Jordan? I demand that you leave at once.
You were the Andorian consul. You'd have known DeMarco was wanted by your government. You'd have known he was an illegal entrant into Egypt.
Are you presuming to tell me what I know?
Yeah, the fact is, I think you did know about DeMarco. I think you were holding what you knew over his head to make him work for you.
Doing what?
Pictures for phony passports. You convinced the few Andorians in Cairo that you're their consul. They turn over their passports to you. Then you sell those passports to anybody who'll pay the price to get out of Egypt. After you force DeMarco to alter the passport photos just enough to resemble the buyer.
Do you think anyone will believe your fantastic theory?
Well, all Captain Sabaya has to do is wire the capital of Andorra. Shall we call him?
Come no closer, Jordan.
I've been watching him. As his hand came out of his pocket with a gun, I kicked the open door. It slammed into his hand, the gun dropped to the floor, and he grabbed for it. My foot came down on his wrist, and my knee caught his jaw. Adamon rolled away, and I picked up the gun, and that was that.
just a moment, Rocky Jordan returns to conclude tonight's story. Catsup experts say the finer the vinegar, the better the catsup flavor.
And that's one big reason why Del Monte Catsup has such marvelous flavor. Del Monte Catsup is made with pineapple vinegar.
Pineapple vinegar is a superlative vinegar. Only Del Monte makes it. Only Del Monte has it. But it isn't that you taste the vinegar. It's what it does for the other ingredients that is so important. The special way it coaxes out all the rich tomato flavor in catsup. Yes, pineapple vinegar is one of the big reasons why Del Monte catsup is the liveliest, snappiest, best-tasting catsup you ever tried.
I know. That rich tomato flavor really perks up everyday foods. You just can't beat Del Monte's rich tomato goodness on meatloaf.
Or on hash or chops or hamburgers. On any food that calls for catsup. Mm-mm. You'll find that appetizing Del Monte catsup flavor makes you want to come back for more.
Try Del Monte catsup soon. For all its goodness, it costs less than many other quality brands.
Back now to Rocky Jordan for the conclusion of tonight's story.
Well, all I had to do was call Sam and then hold Roberto Alleman there in his office till Sam and his men got there. On the way down to headquarters, Sam told me that he'd picked up Hugo Crass less than an hour before, and he'd confessed to working for Alleman. After putting Alleman in a cell next to Crass, Sam sent for Henri DeMarco, and we waited in the office till a man brought him in.
Mr. DeMarco, you have been told that Roberto Alleman is under arrest.
I have, Captain Sabaya. And I am now willing to confess everything.
You should have told us from the beginning, DeMarco.
You are right, Monsieur Jordan. I know that your efforts were only in my behalf.
Yes, yes. Now, your statement. You knew then that Alleman was not a consul at all.
At first, I did not know. At first, we all believed him. Why should we not?
Go on.
I respected his station. So when he brought certain photographs to my shop with instructions as to what I should do with them, I did as he said. But when I began to realize what was happening, I went to him.
And then came the threats.
Yes. He said that he would expose me. Please, I have lived respectably in your city. I married a good woman of your people. For her sake...
But you continue to do what he said.
For a time. Finally, I would have no more of it. I am not a criminal. And I told Alleman that.
Just before you called me last night?
I knew what he would do to me, Monsieur Jordan. I was frantic for help.
Sure. Before I got there, Alleman had his men pick you up and leave a guy to smash the place. After slapping you around, they planned to dump you back at your shop.
Until they saw the police there. After they got my promise of silence, they gave me money to buy new cameras and equipment so that I might continue in business as before and do their bidding. Captain, had I known what I do now of Alleman...
Many were fooled by him for a time. Were we not, Jordan?
I figure Andorra doesn't even have a consulate in Cairo.
Quite true. One can get away with many things in Cairo for a time.
Sure had a slick racket.
Mr. DeMarco, acting as you did under coercion, I feel sure that no charges will be preferred against you. However, regarding the charges of your own government...
Captain Sabaya, I am willing and ready to return to Andorra and right my wrong as best I can.
You will please step outside the office and wait there.
As you wish.
Thanks for going easy with him, Sam.
Little does DeMarco know how much he has helped.
Huh?
This problem of certain criminals who have been mysteriously escaping from Egypt, we know now how they did it, with fake passports issued by Roberto Alleman.
Then the Egyptian government shouldn't be sore at DeMarco now that it's cleaned up.
No, I should think not. After DeMarco has paid his debt in Andorra, my country should have no objection to his returning here and taking up his business once again.
Can I count on that?
I am counting on it. In fact, Henri DeMarco has promised on his return to take some family photographs of me and my wife and four children.
For the finest in tomato flavor, enjoy the whole family of Del Monte tomato products.
Del Monte catsup and chili sauce,
Del Monte tomato sauce and canned tomatoes,
and Del Monte tomato juice.
Remember, buy wisely. Buy for flavor. Buy Del Monte. Del Monte, the brand you trust for flavor in so many good foods. Rocky Jordan, written by Larry Roman and Gomer Cool, stars Jack Moyles in the title role with Jane Avello as Sam Sabaya, and is produced and directed by Cliff Howell, with original music composed and conducted by Richard Arant. Remember, you have a date next week at the Café Tambourine, run by Rocky Jordan. Same time, same station. And the story is Black Ball. The best liked brand of peaches in the whole wide world. That's Del Monte peaches. Sliced or halved, they're truly delicious. Del Monte peaches. And now before we sign off, we just want to remind you this year, more than ever before, your community chest needs your support. Give all you can. Larry Thor speaking. Rocky Jordan is presented over CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That's the Relic Radio Show for this week. There's more from Box 13, Rocky Jordan, past episodes of this podcast, all of the other podcasts, and a Shoutcast stream, all at relicradio.com. There's thousands of episodes to listen to there, all made possible by your support. If you'd like to help out, visit donate.relicradio.com or click on one of the links on the website. And as always, thank you to those who have helped out, and thanks for joining me this week. I'll be back tomorrow with Case Closed, and next Tuesday with another hour of the Relic Radio Show.